What is up, DGC? We're hanging out. It's live today. And, man, I got a couple. First off, dude had technical difficulties like 3 minutes ago, and he's out, man. He told me I gotta move on and carry this show. But it should be no problem because I got great guests. And, man, we're going to talk a little organic/synganics today, all right? It's been bugging me out, man. Anytime you say synganics and somebody chuckles or snickers, I'm like, what? So I brought my crew on. I brought some friends of mine on, and let's BS about it, man. Yeah, we ready? Grambo, I might need you, man. I might need you for some backup.
Oh, I'm here, baby. Let's do this.
Come on, let's do it, man. This is an awesome crew. First off, Jordan River, Growcast. What's up, brother?
Hey, man. Good to see you, Scotty. Good to see you, DGC. Happy to be here to talk about organics. You know I'm down to talk about organics and synganics anytime.
I love it, man. Damn, I'm about to talk about that tropical background you got there.
It's not a green screen.
Yeah, wow. Look at that, man. You are in Hawaii, sir. Do I have that correct?
Yes, I'm on the island of Molokai. It's one of the smallest, least populated islands. And my family's out here, so I'm out here visiting. We're conducting a pheno hunt. We're, doing some natural farming stuff. It's really, really exciting. Growcast still goes along as normal, but it's all from the islands. So I'm very excited. Got to get you out here sometime, Scotty.
I have lots more questions and twist my arm. Deal, man. Hey, let me say what's up to Drano. Drano, what's up, brother?
What's up, Scotty? What's up, DGC? How is everybody?
I don't know about all y'all. I'm great, man. I'm doing great. And it's good to have you here. Me and you text back and forth, and you'll actually pull out the microscope and teach me about anaerobes. And, man, I'm going to actually want to send you some of the soil from the dual root zone buckets because I am curious what's going on there, man. But welcome. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. All right, man. Me too. And Ben Owens, what's up, brother?
What's up, Scotty? Thanks for having me on the show.
You know what, man? I think the DGC, anyone that listens to all the shows, will have some laughs because, man, you came up a couple days, two episodes.
Not ChatGPT.
No. Everything was poking fun. He was like, man, Owens, is that a made-up person, you think? Is it real? So he started doing research.
And then once he found out you're real, he bought your book.
He got it. Canada has them still in stock. He said he got it in like 2 days.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Man, marketplace. Yeah, I mean, you're right, man. A hobby grower. And what, you wrote the Grow Hort Guide? Is that what this is?
No. So the Clean Growing book is the one you guys found online. That's my project I worked with Zach Ricciardi on. Zach's an IPM expert, and he's a good friend of mine. And he did a lot of videos on it. You know, a lot of people in this space have their medium of choice, and I told him that it had to be a book. And so we've been working on that and finally got it out, and it's been well received.
Yeah, right on, man. Man, how long does it take to write a book, bro?
I mean, you can dial it in quickly. It took us about a year to get this with both of our schedules and other projects, so.
Yeah, excellent, man. Excellent. So checking the chat, man, making sure everything is smooth. All right, man, you guys want to start with a little organic conversation? And, man, actually, I started asking with Drano, man. What are you doing when you're in that soil? Like you were sending me pictures of microbes in the soil. What are you looking for? You're looking for like a microbial count. And are you specifically totally organic in your grow?
Yeah. In my grow right now, I actually am trying out some grow dots. So I'm not totally organic, but typically, yeah, I'm totally organic using compost, dry amendments, fermented fruit juices, labs, things like that. But yeah, when I'm looking under the microscope, I'm not really looking for quantity all the time. My main thing is I'm just looking for the good guys and making sure there's good guys there and not bad guys. So there's different types of microbes, and typically your aerobic microbes are better for a soil environment, and anaerobic aren't. So I'm just looking to see how many of each there are, and looking for nematodes, looking for protozoa because they're really important for the soil food web. They consume microorganisms and release the nutrition. So I'm just looking to make sure there's life there, and there's a lot of good life there.
And so one of the biggest myths is that microbes don't play well with synthetic soils. So with a guy with a microscope right now, what do you see with reaction to synthetics and microbes? I mean, in organics and microbes, it's this, you know, the what do they call it? The soil food web going on there.
Yeah. So yeah. There are definitely some synthetic fertilizers that can have, you know, some sort of hindrance to microorganisms. But for the most part, a lot of what we're using are very hardy and survive very well in even in heavy salt situations. Bacillus, for example, is very, very salt tolerant. And that's a very, very powerful one. So, yeah, I mean, they thrive well in synthetic environments. And a big thing is we're constantly doing re-inoculations. So even if you had a small bit of microbial population damage, you're re-inoculating and keeping that life there. So,
yeah. And that is, Jordan, I know that you're, I've been to your classes, man, but the whole like circle farming thing, the whole letting, you know, feeding the soil and letting it all kind of, you know, building soil, I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, go ahead.
No, hit it, man. I was just going to say, that's a lot different than what you're doing. It's a lot different than what they call nutrient cycling, where you're just trying to get that nutrient into the plant. Tell us about that.
Well, I feel like there's a million different ways to do this, right? And I think that's the most important thing to recognize, is there's a bunch of different ways to skin a cat. And, you know, Drano said it perfectly. There are some inputs that can knock back your biology, but it's about the concentration of these inputs and the types of, basically the type of nutrient that you're adding. Now, because, you know, back in the day, if you were using bottles, you weren't organic, right? And it's funny, we say organic and we throw this word around, but it's like, it's probably important to define terms. Because organic in the dictionary just means any sort of compound that's carbon-based. But organic in USDA certification means one thing. You can't use synthetic nutrients. You can't use pesticides. You have to store things a certain way sometimes, depending on your crop. And then there's organic like we talk about it. And I feel like when we're having this conversation as growers about organic, generally we're talking about microbe-friendly and earth-friendly practices. That's generally what we're talking about. You're using inputs that don't kill off all your bacteria. They don't kill your worms. They don't kill off all your fungi that you're adding in there. That's generally an organic grow. But like I said, that's different than USDA certified organic. Those are two totally different definitions. But generally, when we're, as growers, talking about organic inputs, we're basically talking about microbe-friendly and earth-friendly. It's not going to harm the environment, for instance.
Yeah. I mean, it's diatomaceous earth. It doesn't have any carbon in it, but it's
not synthetic.
Based, you know? Yeah,
exactly. So we throw these words around, but it's important to define our terms. And absolutely, you can incorporate some amount of bottled fertilizers and even synthetic fertilizers into a system and not kill off all the bacteria. You know, Bacillus was mentioned. Mycorrhizal fungi. Mycorrhizal fungi is hardy. It's a very, once it's established, it's a very resilient microbe. So you can pour a little bit of super juice on there if you want. If you don't think Synganic growing produces high quality flower, two must follows on Instagram. The first is Chi-Town Canachica, great grower, does a perfect Synganic style with a rich soil but a low nutrient count. And then also the Flower Farm with a PH. He's our Southeast chapter captain down in Florida, and he is a Synganic grower who does amazing work. So whatever works for you, and to me, I'm just trying to keep my microbes alive. I'm trying to keep my soil thriving and healthy. Anything beyond that, I don't care.
Yeah. Are you growing anything in Hawaii?
Yes, absolutely. I've got some seedlings right here off camera. We're doing a pheno hunt out here. Just a small little one. It's what I can kind of fit on the beds on the property, probably be about 30, 35 plants. We're growing them out in the Hawaiian sun, man. It's totally different growing down here. And I've had to kind of rework my style. And to that point, I think another trap that we fall in as growers is kind of like, oh, I've got my style. It works really well. I'm never going to change anything. You kind of fall into the trap of like, hey, I know everything because I'm getting good, consistent results. But that's how you stop growing and learning as a gardener. So it's always good to switch things up sometimes. Even if it does cause problems, those problems are going to be opportunities to learn. So that's what we're doing out here. We're trying to source as much as I can locally. I'm trying to draw upon knowledge of growers who grow here already to give me heads up about what's going to happen, you know? And Yeah, it's a totally different animal, growing in a different environment, growing with a different nutrition style. It's a whole new set of challenges, and it's a whole new set of opportunities to learn.
Yeah, right on, man. Right on. I might have to come visit, brother. hey Ben, what are you? You're a new mill guy, right?
So I'm a new mill guy, but I wanted to double down on what Jordan was saying about, you know, constantly changing it up. And that's what led. So I just did my first raised bed run using soil amendments, just add water, kind of did a 3x3 raised bed. And it was a fun experience. Like, I didn't max out the tent. You know, I got like 10 ounces of flour and just over a half ounce of rosin, which is, you know, not bad, but it's definitely not the max a 4x4 can put out. But it was a totally different experience than, you know, mixing and feeding jugs and going the synthetic route, which I've dialed in and, you know, been fairly successful with in the short time that I've used it. But, you know, at the same time, like, I've got grow dots running right next to me and the two plants there. And right on. I love that process too. So, I mean, like, there's a balance, but I've been using microbes and bacillus, you know, the entire time. So I'm more heavy on the synthetic side, leaning in the synganic, but definitely room for that organic, you know, to be a part of that mix.
There is. And by the way, I just brought this bucket up because I have a couple of these buckets that my kid has her med card and is of age. And I was like, hey, do you want a bucket of weed? Because there's, you know, the market has totally changed. I'm not really growing for, you know, slanging anymore. And I have another three or four buckets that are supposed to come down in a few weeks, you know? So it's like, things that, no, I don't know, is anybody growing for yield anymore?
I mean, I think at a certain level, like, if you're doing this as a hobby and you're not selling the final product, like, you do have to be somewhat cautious or conscious of what you're spending. Like, at the end of the day, it's a hobby. People have hobbies that are very expensive, like building cars or guitars or, you know, other things that you're interested in. But at a certain level, if you are budgeting, like, you do kind of need to see some sort of return. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be like, how can I get the cheapest, best weed possible? But I do think there's a balance of, like, not caring at all and making it at least worth it to be growing it. I mean, like, if you're spending more than you would spend buying it on growing it, then something in your methods may be worth looking into.
Well, Drano, you're a small scale grower, right? You're just doing it to, you know, to feed the habits, sir.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, me and my girlfriend both were pretty, you know, daily smokers. So I'm pretty much just growing for me. And yeah, I mean, I agree. I think there's a limit. I've been guilty of playing around too much and spending a lot of money and growing smaller plants just for the fun of it and realizing that I'm not getting what I should out of it. So yeah, I mean, I agree that there is some level of care you have to put in to make sure you do get somewhat of a good yield.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be like an amazing amount, but at the same time, it has to be worth your while. And if whatever you get is worth your time and brings you joy, then you're doing it right.
Man, I've been trying to make growing easy or simple. That's been my motto for, like, I don't know how many years. And I was just moping around the house Saturday. Like, I want to go in my garden. I want to do something. And there was absolutely nothing to do. I just went and smoked a joint in there and hung out. So it must be time for a little bit of change up, you know?
Yeah,
I'm told to shut up and grow good looking weed for now.
But that beginner stuff is important, man, and making it easy for beginners. Like, that's what this is all about. If we're going to get more people growing, you don't want to turn them off with some crazy soil food web talk. You don't want to turn them off by going, let me tell you how to pH your nutrients, and their eyes just glaze over. You want to make it easy for somebody stepping in for the first time and then get them through a first run so that they're happy with it. Then you can start saying, hey, you want to switch styles? Are you more into this or more into that?
Sure.
You know what I mean? And on the yield front, I feel like often styles get blamed more than the application themselves. So, like, you know, does organic yield less inherently than synthetic? Absolutely not. Nutrient delivery is nutrient delivery. That being said, for a beginner, it might be way harder to achieve that perfect nutrient delivery in a living soil system. Why? Because they don't water optimally, because they just got started, right? And why? Because the no-till bed is pretty fresh still. Organics pay off with time. It's like a savings account. So if you invest in your bed, it's going to get better with age, like a fine wine. And I think a lot of times people have trouble in their first organic run. Maybe they did small pots in organics and then they didn't get watering on point and they got crappy yields and they try to swear it off. I urge people to kind of branch out once they've had some successful harvests.
We call it soil building organically, and Drano hop in here too, Mr. Microscope hop in here. But when you build soil, you're building a bacteria and a fungal network, and then they are cycling nutrients and making them plant available. Original organic nutrients are not in a plant available form, correct?
Yeah, I mean, this kind of goes back to, again, what Jordan was saying earlier about the definition of organic. Most of the amendments I'm using typically are not plants available when I apply them. They're intended to be broken down by the microorganisms there and be food to stimulate that biology and go through that biological process of breaking down the organic matter and releasing that nutrition into the plant. But there are also some other fertilizers that can be labeled organic but are in a plant available form. There's a lot of different amino acid products out there that absolutely have nitrogen and other minerals possibly attached, and those are bioavailable for the plant. So there's different types of organic things for all different types of people and different types of growers.
Sure, but what I'm thinking, for how it was explained to me, is that organic molecules are really big and that they need to be broken down into this ionic form, and that's the plant available form. And that's, absolutely. What salt-based nutrients are doing, doing a little cheat to get right in there.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And in nature, that's done. The work is done by the microbes. The microbes produce enzymes. Enzymes are catalysts for change, usually breaking something down, dissolving something, making it smaller, more available. But nutrient uptake is a wider picture than just chelation or just pH. It's all of these things combined. Like if something is literally soluble because it's a small particle size, it's going to be able to be uptaken by the plant more readily, regardless of the pH. So it's like this broad picture, including like EH, and we just did a really good episode with Nick from Rooted Leaf on this. And nutrient availability is a broad picture that we sometimes just focus down to one thing, like chelating agents or like pH. So it's a bigger picture. And in organics, that should all be taken care of for you. All you got to do is mimic nature, and all that stuff should be taken care of for you. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time and a little bit of finagling, but that is one of the benefits of organics.
Man, how come with organics, shout out to Real Growers Recharge, man, it's my product. It's made me a better grower. The best compliment I get is it makes bad growers think they're good, or at least look good. But I get to tell people, hey, man, you don't need to pH. You don't need to, be using a pH pen and calibrating it all the time and worrying about it. Yes, it's not going to help you if your pH is a mess. But if you're within that range, there's a pH of the rhizosphere. We actually did an article about how humic acids are able to chelate and provide a different pH right at the rhizosphere, right where the root meets the soil. I thought that was kind of interesting stuff. But why is it that when you use organic components that you get a much broader pH?
Enzymes. Again, enzymes are capable of adjusting pH as needed. These microbes have a relationship with the roots, and they're doing a trade. So the roots are exuding things like sugars and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so if it needs a specific mineral, a specific microbe is going to use a specific enzyme to make it soluble. If it needs the pH changed, enzymes can do that as well. I got to say, though, man, I gotta stop and say, your Recharge is a great product. It's probably my number one all-in-one microbe package. A lot of people ask me, like, what's your number one additive? And there's lots of options out there, but your blend is really, really nice. I got to give you props on that. Recharge is up there, maybe my number one all-in-one microbe package. So shout out, man.
It's very kind. Thank you so much. I'll take the compliment, but you're really complimenting Recharge. I tell you what, I just asked. I kind of did this years ago. Hey, man, what are some of the organic components that will play well with synthetics? And it was things like Bacillus, believe it or not, Trichoderma, mycorrhizae, if it's the right kind of mycorrhizae and you get it on early enough. Kelp, you know, kelp's amazing. I want to talk, the reason I'm bringing these up, I want to talk about them all. Humic, fulvic, amino acids, and I'll jump right into that, man, is organic chelators. I would love, can y'all teach us about chelators? Who would like to, man? Who would like to talk chelation?
Yeah, so humic and fulvic, those are both great, two great chelators. The difference between humic and fulvic is humic's just a little bit larger molecule, where fulvic's a little bit smaller. They both have really great chelation properties.
Humic what is very chelation?
Yeah, so chelation is the act of like a humic acid or a fulvic acid will bind to or surround ions, and it can change the charge. So the root zone is negatively charged, and some micronutrients are positively charged, which means they can't enter the root zone. So when they're chelated with humic acid, the humic acid or fulvic acid can change that charge to a neutral or negative charge so that it can be absorbed in the roots.
All right, that's huge.
And real quick, if I could steal in, Scott, yes, you might notice right here on screen, we have our first ever super chat in the history of Dude Grows Show.
Wow.
From Billabong 42. Thank you, buddy. That is this historic day in Dude Grows time. We got a partnership program today, so thank you, Billabong 42.
Is that from New Zealand?
That's two New Zealand dollars. Scotty, does recharge turn cocoa into soil?
Does recharge turn cocoa in the soil?
That's his question.
I don't know. What's your definition of soil, guys?
There you go.
Come on, man. $2 gets you on this. Gets you asking questions on the show, man.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Is like a byproduct of the coconut husk. We have it here on the island. They make their own cocoa coir. I do not think it qualifies as soil. There's like all specific definitions that like define soil and dirt. Soil is made up of sand, silt, and clay, some ratio of those three things. Cocoa is none of those things. But to the chatter's point, something like recharge, if reapplied regularly, acts as the same benefits as if you had constant application of those things in a living soil system. You understand what I'm saying? So it may not hang around and proliferate that microbiology as much as in a living soil system, but if you keep applying it with each run, with each watering, or whatever the recommended dosage is, you're going to get those same benefits. So you get a lot of the benefits. It doesn't turn cocoa into soil necessarily, but you're going to get a lot of those same benefits by adding a product like recharge.
Because like a compost, it's almost like what you might get from like a compost leachate or something like that. You know? So what is any of y'all compost? And if so, is that I'm trying to think, man, if we're going to some of the components that we can add to our grows that like I used to put a little earthworm castings every time that I would transplant, just take a couple handfuls of earthworm castings and mix them around some great organic stuff that really helped. You know, things like that, even regular, you know, other kind of compost, what earthworm castings, vermicompost, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, vermicompost. I compost pretty regularly at home and at work. So it's a big part of my life. And vermicompost is a great additive to your soil. It provides so many organic compounds, from enzymes to nutrition in a bioavailable form to loads of biology, bacteria and fungi. So there's a ton of benefits to a good vermicompost.
And do you make your own compost? Or is anybody compost?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you pocket mulching at all?
I think that you, like you mentioned, things that you can kind of throw into your grow and use every time. I think composting and making your own compost tea is a really, really great strategy to inoculate with. Basically, the compost has all those same humic acids that you buy in a bottle. You know what I mean? So if you're adding that regularly, you're getting all those humics and fulvics, plus a lot more biology and all sorts of bacteria in there. So for instance, Mary Beth Sanchez is one of my heroes, one of my gardening heroes, and she waters with compost tea every single time. She uses a dilution, but like every single time she waters, it's like 20% compost tea. So there's a constant delivery and flow of humic acids and beneficial bacteria and who knows what else that's living inside that compost.
So if we're talking soil building, that's just the vitamins, I guess. It's not the steak and potatoes though, right? Those humic acids, there's,
you know what it is? It's your gut bacteria. Here's how to look at it. The photons are food. the nutrients, the minerals in the ground, those are your vitamins and minerals. Mm-hmm. And the bacteria is your gut bacteria. It's how healthy your digestive system is and how you're going to be able to digest those vitamins to get them into your system and to grow big and strong and healthy.
Very cool. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, it's good. It's good stuff, man. But yeah, on the humic acid note, using those humic acids a lot is a really great idea, especially if you're worried about contamination, because I think it was Drano who said, yes, they do chelate minerals that we need the plant to take up. The other thing is they hold minerals that we don't want the plant to take up. They act as almost little cup holders that the plant can then drink from as it needs. Think about it like that. Because for instance, if there's mercury in your soil, let's say there's high levels of a heavy metal that you don't want. Well, sure. Cannabis is a bioaccumulator. It naturally likes to take those things up if it's exposed to it. It's drinking up water, the mercury runs off, sucks up some water. Oh, got that mercury too. Humic acids will inhibit heavy metals and non-soil fertilizer elements from being taken up and stored in the plant. So it's a great tool in your toolkit. You should be adding humic acids of some form, I believe,
yeah.
Especially yeah. If you're a soil grower, just add more.
Agreed, man. Man, yeah. Cocoa as well. I know we talk about how different cocoa, you know, cocoa's not soil. Man, I have a shirt that says I'm in love with the cocoa and I should go put it on right now. Man, that stuff is forgiving. It's just so easy with watering.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest problems, right? I think we talked about on your show, Scotty, when I teach beginners to do organics, I say it's the three M's: minerals, microbes, and moisture. The minerals have to be in there and be present. A lot of these bagged super soils, they're just not hot enough. You get 4 weeks into flower and your plant's yellowing out. They didn't put enough minerals in there. Like those yeah. are the rocks. Those are the rocks and things that are in the soil outside that your plant taps into naturally. So it's got to have enough minerals. Then you got to have the microbes present there to break down those minerals and really break them down. You're growing a fast plant. This isn't a tree. You need
That's
this
what
thing
I'm
to
saying.
You need to rip from beginning to end. So make sure the microbes are present. And then the last part is the hardest. Moisture. The microbes are going to thrive at that 50-50 air to water ratio, and you need to maintain it. A lot of beginners drown their organic grows, and that's where they run into trouble. Cocoa, it's like impossible to overwater. So that's one of the great forgiving things about cocoa.
Yeah.
That's why you have to try different styles to see what works for you. It goes right back to what we were saying at the beginning of the show. Switch it up.
Agreed, man. I've been trying to perfect this sip for a while because I handle a lot of customer service calls, and it is so hard when you have to tell somebody they called their girlfriend too many times, man. You know, they blew it. No, they watered the plants too much. And then when they look like crap, what do? You go to the grocery store, you ask for another bottle, you bring it on and you water it again. And so overwatering, overloving the plants is a big issue. And that's why I've been working on the sip buckets for a long time, man. Anybody ever work with sip buckets, dual root zone stuff?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I remember when you were talking about them. Oh, I don't know. It's been probably a couple of years ago now. You were talking about sure. them on the show, and you kind of talked about how you did them. So I decided to make a couple of my own, and I had a couple of really good grows with them. And now they actually just came in today. I got some earth boxes to get away from the bed because the earth boxes are just a little bit easier to move around. And so those are the kind of the same idea. They're sub irrigated. They have the space at the bottom. And
when you look at the soil with a microscope, looking at different types of bacteria, do you find more anaerobic bacteria? Does the soil, they say going anaerobic is when it stinks and it's that's bad. Do you find that soil goes anaerobic, or it's touchy when you're using these dual root zone sip buckets?
You know, so that's actually something I haven't done. I haven't used the sip buckets since I've had the access to the microscope and all the, right. you know, all the tools I have now. So once I get the earth boxes, that'll be something I'll definitely check into.
The earth boxes yeah. are great. It's my number one recommendation for beginners. And not just for beginners. I did a run recently in Oklahoma with them, and they just work so well. They cut out that overwatering scenario. The water in the reservoir just kind of weeps up into the soil, and the plant goes down and fills that space. Like those things drink like crazy towards the end. I really recommend earth boxes. We've actually got a resource going out to our members that shows you how to take a Home Depot tote and convert it into an earth box. You can figure it out really easy by looking up an earth box and doing it. But a little bit bigger so you can get a little bit of a bigger reservoir and leave it unattended for a little longer.
Yeah.
Even better. Yeah.
So when it comes to something like that, it's water only in the bottom. You're not feeding it organic nutrients on the bottom, are you?
You can towards the end. It'll drink in like 24 hours, depending on how many plants you put in there, depending on how developed the roots are, depending on how much the cultivar drinks. I've seen people put like an organic nutrient in the reservoir and it's almost dry 20 hours later. I would not do that in the beginning before the roots have established because it's going to go anaerobic for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Ben, you hand water? Are you a hand waterer, sir?
Yeah, I hand water. I did the blue mat thing for a while, and I really liked that. So when I started growing as a beginner, I kind of came in with the bias of a consumer, which was that like organic was immediately just going to be better. And so as a result, I tried to do organics and tried to do certain things like passive gravity feeding and things like that. And
right.
I just had, you know, at some point I had to break down and be like, this is not working. And so I need to figure out how this is supposed to work. And so like, I love the blue mat system. And now that I'm in a bed, I'm actually considering getting it all out, cleaning it up and reinstalling it because there's a lot to that now that I'm on a water only. But with any sort of bottle feeds, I found that they clogged for me. So I've been on the hand water kick, but I also only have 2 4x4s. And I say that I have a 2x4 next to me and I have a 2x2 in front of me. And, but you know, I'm a tent grower.
Yeah. Right on. Right on. So,
I'll hand water for now.
Yeah. Would you all recommend in such a small area, whether a tent grower or 2x4, it doesn't matter. You can do organics in any area.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Container size.
Yeah, they make living soil beds. I think it's Grassroots Fabric Pots has them that are just 2 inches short on either side, so they'll fit perfect in a 2x4 tent with a couple inches on either side. A couple earth boxes will fit in a 4x4. One will fit in a 2x4, and I mean you could outgrow a 2x4 with an earth box. So there's a lot of options for home growers or smaller scale growers.
And earth box, you put a living soil in there, or you'll put a organic fortified soil in there?
Yeah, I mean, that's the way that I've seen it done a lot of times. I think when they were originally designed, they were designed for more of a style like what you're doing. But a lot of people have had a lot of success with the soil, with the living soil, and doing multiple runs in that living soil in that bed. So,
right. You currently hand water or you just got to sit by the earth box, you said.
Well, right now I'm running the grow dots. So yeah, I'm hand watering.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. I was just going to add like my buddy Love for the Plant. He's been on the show before. Shout out Jeremy.
Shout out to Jeremy, man. I think he broke his jaw or something.
Yeah, he did. He's recovering. Man. But, I get to plant sit for him occasionally. And I say get to, cause I always learn something from him. One of which is, he uses these soil mixes that we're using in beds. Like he has a living soil bed that he's been using, but he also does super soil runs in his containers and he runs all sorts of different sizes and all different sorts of tents. So like, it's definitely a style. I mean, grow dots to me is kind of like the idiot's guide or the cliff notes of, you know, just add water. Like you can, similar setup. You're doing it with, you know, just adding the dots as opposed to amending the soil and mixing it up and starting that process.
For me, the worst thing that can happen for all of us is for someone to go buy $500 tent or whatever they get on Amazon, come home and try growing and fail. And then they wrap the stuff up and they put it away. And that's the end of any kind of, you know, possibility of passion for them, you know, or a new hobby for them. So that's, so I'm in the beginning phase of just throw this stuff on and keep this bucket filled and you'll get something and you hopefully will get the hook in it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the goal, right?
Yeah. You know, well, all right. So if you're on the island where you're on Malachi, is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And somebody comes up to you and says, man, hey, you know about growing cannabis? I'd love to grow cannabis. How do I get started? What do you think, man?
Oh, man. I literally think about that. I obsess over this stuff, Scotty. And okay. You nailed one of the biggest pieces of the puzzle. Because, okay, we want to overgrow, right? Like if everybody who wanted to grow did grow, we'd all have enough food and medicine. That's the idea, right? So anything you're doing should be towards that guiding light of teaching people how to do it. The first challenge is convincing them to plant a seed. you have to, they're going to say, how do you do it? Right. And you have to explain it to them without freaking them out, without, like I said, freaking them out about the soil food web or freaking them out about pH and their plants. That's when their eyes glaze over and they won't try. If you can get them past that stage, it goes to what Scotty said. You have to get them a first successful run. That is the number one killer of new growers, is they spend a bunch of money, they get no run, and they quit for the rest of their life. Mission failed, right? Wasted, Grand Theft Auto style. So you've got to make sure that you give them something that's going to work and it's going to get them through one run. From there, let them branch out to whatever they want to do, right? So if I'm telling a first-time grower this is what you do, I recommend getting feminized genetics. Because not because I think they're better or worse or anything, but because that is a huge hurdle for new people is sexing. So you get them feminized genetics, whether it's photoperiod or autoflower, whatever makes sense for them. You get a good living soil from your local grow store, not from Lowe's. You get a cannabis specific living soil and you get an earth box and you put it in that soil. If you're outside, autoflowers work great because it gets people started. You can start basically any time of year.
Right.
As long as you're not running into winter. And then if you're indoors, you know, photoperiodism is sometimes a challenge for people, but most people buy grow tent kits now, like the AC Infinity kits. So it's not so intimidating when you have a grow tent. You have to get them through that first run. Otherwise they're going to quit forever. I just try to go by what they want to do, but if they don't have a specific way they want to grow, then I recommend an earth box for a beginner for sure.
I love it. We were talking, I don't know if it was before the show or on the show, but that a lot of these soils, the living soils, run out, man, or at least these hot fortified soils do. Do y'all have any recommendations? Is there any kind of, if you're doing a soil only run, do y'all have any recommendations?
Yeah, I mean, when I'm growing in soil, I'm doing a top dressing every couple weeks to remineralize. After every harvest, I'm going to top dress again with compost, minerals, just to keep re-amending that soil and keep those minerals there.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I see some love in the chat for Build a Soil. I think they're a great option. Probably let's be honest, it's like one of the best cannabis specific soils you can get. You can get it mailed. They have Build a Flower, which is like their top dress or their concentrate. So that's really cool. Just a local good source. We like Bio365. We like Detroit Nutrient Company. Purple Cow is an okay one. That's a good one in the Midwest. Just depends on where you are. Depends on what your store has. But Build a Soil, probably like my number one recommendation. Really hot soil. It's good stuff.
I agree with that. Build a Soil has a cool little kit on their website where they sell you the earth box, enough soil to go in the earth box, and their Build a Flower compost top dress. So that alone is enough to probably get you through an entire grow, your entire first grow, and it's relatively fairly priced, and I think a lot of people that care about the environment, you know, it's something that's more popular nowadays. That's a great alternative and a great easy way for them to get into something they can feel good about.
Yeah, very cool, man. I invited Jeremy on, man. I did do it like yesterday at like 7 o'clock, so. I'm hoping it'll come on sooner than later. That'd be great.
Nice.
Excellent, man. All right. I'm going to shamelessly bring it back to synthetics, man, and Synganic. All right. I love that. And I probably will get, hopefully when I dial these in with the grow dots and the real buckets, maybe we'll play with an earth box one day. It definitely seems cool. But right now I got my synthetics. I've got my my grow dots, we'll say. What would y'all recommend as far as organic components that could increase quality? I'll let you go.
Yeah, I mean, right off the bat, I'm gonna shameless plug for you, Scotty, Recharge, because it's got the kelp and the molasses, and that's really important when you're in an inert media like coconut core. You gotta have food for those microbes, and so getting the molasses in there is gonna be great. Obviously, microbial inoculants like Recharge, there's a lot of them out there, and vermicompost. I think really those two together is a big deal. And then, of course, I always say kelp, but you get that in your Recharge. So,
you know what? Let's talk about kelp first. First of all, vermicompost, because just really quick, the earthworm castings is what that is. Is there something wrong with going buying the big bags of wiggle worm? Sometimes people will turn their nose up at the wiggle worm because it's I don't know why, man. Is that stuff okay? Is there an earthworm castings that y'all all recommend?
You know, I think that I think it really depends on how it's been stored and how it's been shipped. Sometimes that wiggle worm might be in the garden section where it's gotten rained on and it's been trapped in that plastic wrapping and has gone anaerobic. Other times maybe they have it inside and it's dried out. Now, if it's been dried out and treated well, there's still going to be some benefits to using that vermicompost. But I'm going to go back to Build-A-Soil and shout out that they sell great vermicompost. Colorado Worm Company has great vermicompost, and they aren't all created equally. So some of them are made by using a compost as the main food source. And what that's done is really brought a lot of those minerals and those all that diverse biology from outside into your vermicompost. You know, whereas some of them are really good made with a lot of food scraps, but I think there's a lot of special extras you get from feeding your vermicompost a compost. So they're definitely not all created equal. And if you can get a high quality vermicompost, you're going to be better off.
I like SD Microbes BioVast. Oh, yeah. That's the stuff. SD Microbes BioVast. It's not cheap, but shout out to Andrew. We saw him at the Living Soil class, and all the samples looked insane. And he's just really passionate about it, man. He's passionate about documenting all the different species of nematodes that they're finding inside BioVast.
Wow.
He's a really cool guy. Andrew from SD Microbes. You should reach out to him. Get him on the show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Great, great vermicompost. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff out there, man. And I agree. Vermicompost is a great, a wonderful additive.
I agree. Except, you know what? I am thinking that I think that wiggle worm does go anaerobic, man, because it is active as hell.
Interesting.
It's like the one you can buy. I don't know. Sometimes they'll have it at Home Depot. It's the one every grocery store has, but it's compact, man. It's heavy.
Yeah, probably.
So, vermicompost shouldn't be heavy like that. It should be aerated.
Like fluffy almost. It's sometimes it's more sandy, right? Sometimes it's a little more like heavy. But it should be like pretty fluffy. Would you say so, Drano?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, a lot of it depends on what the inputs are, but I think a really, really good, well balanced vermicompost is gonna be fluffy, but it's also gonna be able to pack together but then break back apart. That's what's important about it. So there's definitely some you can relate it to like soil aggregation. It's that same it's kind of like broken up into particles, and it kind of holds that shape.
Yeah, I'm thinking how probably what I'm getting is only, I don't even know if it's building soil structure. But you're probably putting some organic material into the soil, but I don't think the stuff that I'm getting is going to be very microbial active.
I think a shout out to Urban Worm Company. They make a great little urban worm bag that you can use right at home. It's easy enough to put your own food scraps in there. You can inoculate it with your own microbes. Like I used a lot of fermented fruit juices in mine. And they're really easy to maintain. They're so small, and worms are easy to keep happy.
Tell me about that, because I just that is probably the smart thing to do, is just keep your own little vermicompost bin going.
Yeah, so I know back when Guru was on the show, he talked about them several times. They're just a fabric flow-through vermicomposter, and you start with some bedding material, and you feed your food scraps. I feed all of my leftover leaves from when I trim and all different kinds of things, and I just throw in there and they compost it down, and then what I get is vermicompost out the bottom.
That seems pretty cool, man. I'm gonna have to check that out, because just a little bit, and it's like it just gives it a bump, you know, a little boost.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're gonna use castings, earthworm castings, do you make a tea out of them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think there's a lot of benefits to compost teas. I don't typically make a tea out of them, just because I don't see the need to. I'm constantly just re-inoculating right on top, and then I'm breeding a really good, healthy environment, building soil and using the right amendments. So typically I don't do an extra inoculation like that. If I was in an outdoor setting, I would probably do it often. But inside, it's messy to brew a compost tea, and it's a lot easier to grab a product like Recharge and then just kind of grow the environment and treat your soil right so that you're just maintaining a good, healthy ecosystem of microbes.
Yeah. Yeah. When I think of vermicompost, earthworm castings, how different is that than other types of compost, just traditional compost where it's microbially digested? That is a fun word to say, man.
Yeah. So the big difference is you have the whole soil food web in action. So microbes aren't always directly related to releasing nutrition. In some ways they are, but there's a soil food web there. And so the worm's main food is not the food you're putting in there. It's the microbes that are feeding on the food. And so as your worm's traveling through there, it's consuming microorganisms and it's pooping out their dead bodies. And now that nutrition is in a bioavailable form with a ton of enzymes and other great things for your soil and for your plants.
So they're composting it themselves. Yeah. And pulling it out in this more.
Yeah. So they're taking it to like the next level and breaking it down even more and making everything even more available.
Isn't that the same thing compost is doing, but without the worms?
Yeah, yes, that's the same thing you're doing with compost, but vermicompost is like another step. It's even more bioavailable and even more great compounds for your soil and for your plants.
And on the other side of that is your compost is going to get really hot, and you're going to get thermophilic bacteria, the type of bacteria that like that high temperature. There might be more diversity. When we scoped worm castings specifically, there were a lot of fungal spores in the worm poop. So those go through, but you're not going to have like all of the soil food web there, right? Things like protozoa, you know, protozoa, they don't travel so good. You know, a lot of times they needed to be deposited by birds' feet when birds land in your garden, for instance. Wow. So it's not the whole picture, but worm castings are like an incredible, you know what? Wolfman said it best. Worm castings are like ice cream. You can never have enough. they're a great additive that everybody should use. And they're going to provide a lot of fungal spores specifically that hopefully take hold in your garden.
Yeah. Grandpa, you got to listen to the Wolfman. All right.
Thinking since we don't have dude here, it's like we've been mentioning a whole bunch of products out there. And if there's any ones out there that you guys want to check out, make sure you check out over at dudegrows.com/pros, man. We got a lot of the stuff we've been talking about available with discount codes and everything. So
yeah.
I'm the comptroller today. So everyone go check out dudegrows.com/pros.
Here's your mighty build the soil, man.
Yeah.
Hey, Ben, you're a new mill grower, right? Ben? Whoop. I got you.
Nope.
Hey.
There we go.
You use a new mill, I use some of their organic components too. And one of them is a product called Green Sensation. Have you played with that? It's a Playground product.
I have not played with that. You know, I use the Ruby Fulva and I use the Winter Frost and the Carbonaria. But yeah, that's kind of my, other than the seasons, those are the wild cards I added to that mix. I run with either a Recharge or TerraGrow. Those are my two main microbials.
Yeah, I'm thinking of this. A lot of times I'll see these super high-end products. Like one of them is this Green Sensation. And it's got to be some either fraction of seaweed or some seaweed extract. And it's always interesting to me because seaweed works on another another level. We've got humics and fulvics and aminos that chelate, and you've got nutrient cyclers, and then there's seaweed that's just hormones, man. Yeah. That's just loaded with crazy plant growing hormones. You don't want to live with seaweed, man.
Mike's wife, man, she's just seaweed.
She's seaweed all day. I don't know. Anybody, anybody want to geek out on seaweed?
We're going to collect some of our own kelp here on the island and process it. So I'm excited for my buddy Molokai Kevin to help me harvest some sea kelp and process it. The thing about the sea is it's loaded with a lot of the products. If you take things from the sea, are going to be loaded with aquatic microbes. That's really, really good if you're doing like an FAA, or people even just add a diluted seawater. And the reason that is because a lot of those aquatic microbes are going to have massive benefits in your living soil system, and they're going to actually establish and reproduce. I think it was Steve Reisner who told us that 80% in one of his tests of the aquatic microbes he applied from his aquarium survived and proliferated in the living soil. Only 1 in 5 died. So aquatic microbes are great. And then the other thing about things from the sea is they're loaded with micronutrients. And micronutrients, I feel like that's where a lot of the science has yet to be finished and dug up, right? Like, we know there's a massive relationship between micronutrients and microbes, and also micronutrients and the compounds that we're after, whether it's molybdenum influencing anthocyanin or a variety of things, right? So there's a good micronutrient delivery from products from the sea. The flip side of that coin is, I got a lot of experts coming on my show. I'm sure you've heard this before, Scotty. The people who are really, really picky about perfect soil balance, contamination. The problem with sea products is you have to know where they're coming from, where they were sourced. That's going to make a big difference in how much they're contaminated with things like heavy metal, because we pollute the seas, right? So it's like each year, theoretically, sea products are getting worse, is the other side of that coin, right? But personally, I do keep seaweed powder around. I do love adding aquatic microbes, whether it's, you know, free from an aquarium or a bottle of fish shit. I think that's a huge takeaway for people who are doing synganic or organic growing. Make sure you don't neglect the aquatic microbes. The terrestrial ones are great, but you can get even more diversity if you add aquatic microbes to your garden.
I agree, man. Every now and again, if I'm feeling low or just a little low energy, I'll take a little fish shit. You know what I mean?
The fuck out of here, Scotty. sorry, my language. I apologize.
No, it's all good, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that fish shit has been a great product, and it's one of the products that I can say a lot of times when I use it, I see a visual plant change and a visual plant response. And you only have a couple of those products, really. And that's one of them. So that's a great product.
Recharge is another one of those, man. Absolutely. My plant looks better the day after recharge every time.
Yes, absolutely.
I feel like Hygrozyme, you're asking things that people can add. I feel like Hygrozyme is another one of those. And then someone mentioned insect frass in the chat, and I want to say that that's another big one that people overlook is adding some form of chitin to stimulate your plant's immune system. It's basically a hormone elicitor, right? There are studies that show that plants that were attacked by aphids had a higher terpene production. And so it's like, okay, what do we take from the study? Should we just start introducing a small deployment of aphids into each garden? No, we don't want to do that. But what we can do is apply some sort of chitin, which is the basically compound that insects are made out of. A lot of crustaceans are made out of it, things like that. And it turns out that the chitin itself elicits the hormone response. So kiss my frass. That's great. You can apply that as a top dress, as an organic grower. Or there's products like High Shield, which is pure chitinase, which is the enzyme that's associated with chitin. So it's like mainlining that stuff. There's some really cool products on the market, man. There's some really interesting stuff out there. High Shield. Yeah, people are saying High Shield. That's the one.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I'm looking at a couple of I'm looking down my list of things that I wanted to talk about. And we talked about diatomaceous earth. And I can't remember if we talked about this before the show or after the show, or when we actually press record, but there's a debate out there about different forms of silicon and whether they're plant available or not. Damn, this is some inside baseball stuff right here. But silicon dioxide, really inexpensive product, looks like talc almost, you know, it's really, really powder, fine powder. I added a little bit of that into my grow in this, doing like an A/B test just to see if I could see anything noticeable. And I'm trying to figure out if it's plant available or not. Monosilicic acid, potassium silicate, both very obviously plant available. Use a bunch of potassium silicate. You know, your leaves get shiny. You use too much of it. You know, you can see it. But do y'all have any information on, because that silicon dioxide is cheap, man. It's like 10 bucks a kilo or something. I got a kilo of white powder delivered to my house. It was awesome. But what do y'all think, man? Silicon dioxide, same thing diatomaceous earth is made of, man. Is it plant available or not?
Yeah, so no, it's not plant available. But if you're in a living soil system like what I'm in, you can absolutely use diatomaceous earth to get silica into your soil system and into your plants. I like horsetail. I think it's a plant that's by dry weight about 25% in silica, and in a soil system it seems to really break down a little bit better than DE. But there's a lot of really cool products out there using DE. For big ag, there's a product that I've worked with that's a foliar spray that uses diatomaceous earth, and it's very, very finely micronized, down to like as small as they can get it. And so that kind of helps it kind of get a boost into being plant available. And then it's suspended in a liquid that that they can then use foliar sprays and apply it out on the soil and to the plants. So yes, it can be plant available, but not immediately.
That's right. And you mentioned the two ends of the spectrum, right? So monosilicic acid is the smallest plant available, the smallest form right. of silica that you can get on the market to feed to your plants, right? Again, back to uptake of a mineral. This is the smallest form. Therefore, you're going to see much better and quicker results. Compare that to most silica products before Power SI and the other one, Mammoth SI and stuff like that. The old ones were all potassium silicate, right? And again, it has to, somebody's job, usually microbes in nature, has to go in there and cleave that potassium and that silicate apart. So that takes energy, right? So if you can bypass that step and instead directly feed your plant something like monosilicic acid, whereas something like you said, diatomaceous earth, that's going to take like chemical weathering, right? That's kind of like when people say that rice hulls contain silica. They do, but they break down slower than you would think. Even in a soil system that's like really bumping and breaking stuff down, I've seen 10, you know, decade plus old soil beds that still have the rice hulls in there. So yes, it's definitely adding some as it's breaking down, but it's nothing compared to, like you said, adding Power SI. It's like putting race fuel in there. It's the other opposite end of the spectrum. Exactly. They also contain arsenic, the rice hulls. So if you're worried about things breaking down and putting things into your soil, the arsenic is another concern, another reason why you need that humic acid to help the plant drink from those cups, as we kind of put it before. So yeah, again, lots of different approaches. I wouldn't add diatomaceous earth to my grow and be like, okay, now I've delivered silica to the plant. But at the same time, like, couldn't hurt. I usually see diatomaceous earth talked about in an IPM scenario, which it's really good when it's dry at cutting up insects that crawl through it. But once you wet it, it's not as good. Another reason why sip systems are so great, because they keep that top layer dry. You don't have to worry about fungus gnats, and you can use diatomaceous earth effectively. So I think it's a cool tool. Like you said, it's cheap, so you might as well have a bag.
So Jordan, just a quick question for you then, because this is kind of I'm new to the whole soil bed growing. Would you add a product like PowerSci or monosilicium to your soil, like in the synganic form? Like, what's the, I know that there's some taboo around adding synthetics to beds and whether they neutralize the things you've been building for years.
People often like choose one side of this argument before they've like really looked into it, right? Like, they're already on your side. The only way to really tell is to do what Drano does. You pull out your microscope, you do a soil test, you look at how many bacteria are wiggling around the little dots, you look to see if you can find some protozoa and some nematodes, and then you apply the thing, and then you do it again, and you test again and see, is it noticeably less? Are you seeing actual results from applying this bottle that is knocking back your nutrients? Only a microscope or some sort of microbial test will truly tell you that. So,
you're supplementing silica.
I would be sparing with it. Sorry, we got the light hitting my camera.
That's all good.
There. I apologize. I would use it sparingly, but absolutely. If someone gave me one of those sample bottles of Power SI or Mammoth SI, I would use it. Maybe at a lower dosage, definitely at a lower frequency. And I don't think there would be any problem. I mean, guys, these microbes are like hundreds of millions plus years old. They are adaptive. They are powerful. They are smarter than we are. All right. Yeah. Plants have been around a lot longer than us, and they're all tricking us into breeding them, getting cuttings of them, and mailing them all over the goddamn planet. Again, I'm sorry. Right. I got a filthy mouth. So like, they're playing us, and we'll do anything to make them better. And adding additional silica is great. Silica strengthens the cell walls in a way that's different to calcium. It's kind of like the calcium is the framing of the wall, and then the kind of earthquake proofing lattices between them is the silica. So it makes your plant sturdier. It makes it more resistant to heat. It also makes it more resistant to cold. A lot of people don't know that. Silica may also reduce your stretch in the early flower period. So if you are in a small grow tent and you're worried that you're going to outgrow your tent, applying excessive or let's just say ample amounts of silica can reduce the stretch. So there's a lot of benefits of silica depending on your setup. It's a good product.
Yeah. And you know, I would absolutely feel safe using monosilicic acid in a living soil. What we got to remember about monosilicic acid, it's usually really high concentrated. And so we're using a really small amount and a lot of water. And so the negative effect you're going to have on your microbes is going to be little to none. And in a soil system, those microbes are going to regenerate, reproduce, and repopulate so quickly that it won't even, you won't even know that it happened.
Yeah, because you're adding like a mil or two mils to your mix.
And that's another thing. Monosilicic acid seems super expensive, but when you compare it to something, potassium silicate. First off, potassium silicate is a bunch of potassium, so it might screw up your nutrient balance. And then if you look at it, it's 5 mils per gallon.
It's, yeah, because I use monosilicic for when I'm feeding salts or jugs or, you know, whatever term you want to call them. But like with the bed, I stayed away from any of that kind of additives until I knew. So
I might as well, man. But that's that would be different than, would y'all incorporate a little bit of silicon dioxide, some of that powder, into your bed? Or you think that
couldn't
be-
hurt? I feel like it's one of those things that couldn't hurt personally.
Yeah.
It couldn't hurt. I've never personally used it. A lot of people talk about it for pest prevention, but the one thing about DE is it's got to be pretty dry to work as pest prevention. So on a soil surface, if you're keeping it wet, it's not going to have as near as much pest prevention capabilities as what it would if it was dry and just on your floor or at your door sills or whatever. So I've never personally used it, but it couldn't hurt either.
You don't. It's not just inside the pot. You're using it in your windowsills and in doorways.
I mean, I was just saying, if you really had a pest problem, you know,
that's
you really
a trip, had, though.
You know, but that's how it works. And I actually used to work at a transloading facility that used a lot of dry processing of products, and that was the one thing that the DE had to stay dry, and you would run it through all the piping to kill all the insects in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, man, I got one. Would y'all help me answer one question about biochar? I thought it might be right up y'all's alley. Biochar is basically charcoal that they use for soil. And there's a little bit more to it than that. We'll get into it. But T. Atterbury asked on dudegrows.com, hey, DGC, maybe you can help me out with this one and save me a couple hours on Google. Me too. I'll just ask my friends. I got a couple bags of composted biochar. I don't know much about biochar, and I'm wondering if it would be a good soil amendment and all right to use in the tent. And I am a biochar fan. I've made my own retort before. I've made my own. But there's a couple things you definitely need to know about it. So I will ask you first. Anybody there use biochar?
Here's one for Scott. Just a fried pepper. I burned my own word. I'm kind of retorted.
Wow, man. Wow. Retort is you're burning something in an absence of oxygen. And what happens is it carbonizes. It doesn't allow it to burn in the ash. You've probably seen when you have a fire and it doesn't completely combust. It's like that carbon stuff. And if you do it right with biochar, you can make something that's just super aerated and porous and great for microbes.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. I mean, I'll take this one. Biochar is, as someone said, biochar is a must in the soil. I think absolutely. You can add like 5% of your soil as biochar. You're right. It's basically charcoal that's produced under a low oxygen environment. That process is called pyrolysis. And what you're left with are these super aerated, super carbon rich microbe attractors. Basically, microbes can set up shop like a motel in there. And it's a really cool products, because if you've maybe heard some like Graham Hancock stuff or some content around that, biochar is an ancient technology. like indigenous peoples in South America knew that they could inoculate this stuff and bring their microbes to another place to start another garden. Pretty incredible that a lot of us have forgotten that, right? Like we have to relearn that amazing ancient knowledge. So biochar is a great additive, and you don't want to use too much, but it's a must for living soil, I would say. If you have your pick of inputs, I'd say it's considered a must.
So let's make sure that we don't screw things up with it, because it is very easy to. The first thing is don't add too much. We're about 5%, about what you'd add, maybe.
Yep. Mm-hmm. 3-5%.
All right. And now the reason I wanted to bring this up is because it has to do with microbes, and that is inoculation of biochar. It's a home for microbes. And if you don't inoculate it correctly, it will suck the life and microbial life out of your soil. So, who would love to take and help me understand inoculation a little bit more?
You want to talk about that, Trino?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of biochar is inoculated. I've never really had this question or heard much about biochar that wasn't inoculated versus biochar that is inoculated. I think what's more important is the process of really converting that to all carbon. I know in some situations you have like a very like wood chips, for example, the microbes and some nutrient will be absorbed in the process of breaking down that wood. But I'd never heard of that situation with biochar. However, I do use some different microbes to inoculate biochar. I use it in my vermicompost. I use it in compost. So
yeah,
it's a really good additive, and it's really great additive for compost and soils.
Yeah, inoculation is going to bring more, right? And I also hadn't heard of that. It makes sense that they might occupy that space, but if your soil food web is thriving, they should again propagate, proliferate, and reproduce. So yeah, I like it. There's also micronized biochar is something that you can play around with. I think you water it in. It's like really, really fine powdered biochar. So it's supposed to be a really good product. I've got to look more into that, but that's something that I want to
do. And the idea behind it is that it's a home for the microbes. It's when you burn with the absence of oxygen, that it is very porous. That's why it's so light. It's got so much air inside there. And that's a place for the microbes to colonize and hang out.
Correct.
So I wouldn't think that if you ground that down to a tiny particle, then again, microbes are small.
Yes, that's right. I don't know. I gotta play around with that. But you're right. They also kind of act as aeration when they're bigger like that.
Yeah.
They don't use a perlite or pumice here. They use cinder on the island. You can use a bunch of different stuff for aeration in your soil, and here they use these little black pieces of cinder. So
cinder.
It's really cool. I think it's like a volcanic.
Because pumice is volcanic, right?
That's what I said. I said you guys probably use pumice out here, and he said no, we use cinder.
It's imported, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
I think with the micronized biochar, I think it absolutely would still help with aeration, because it does have a ton of pore space and just overall space. In I think a gram of activated carbon or biochar is several thousand square feet. And so even if you micronize that and you make it into a really small, product, there's still a lot of really small things responsible for aeration in your soil. And so even things as small as like soil aggregate that, the kind of sticky glue glomalin that's produced by the microbes that helps hold those particles together and make pathways for aeration. There's a ton of different things, even at a really small scale, that are important for aerating your soil. So I think that even if it's micronized, it would be a great product.
Yeah. Okay. I might look out for it. Sounds like an easy thing to make. Could you imagine if I told Warehouse Kyle that we're making biochar, our next product, man, micronized? I think he'd quit. I think I had a product at one point in time where it was a biochar product, and I was making it in my backyard out of like this 55 gallon drum. And
we talked about that. We said how it should have been called pre-charge.
Right. And then my friends had an intervention with me, and I stopped. It was okay. You know what it is? Biochar is cheap. You go, you know what it was? I looked, I'm like, hey, it's a great business model. And then somebody was like, you want to buy a ton of biochar for $2,000 or something? So yeah, good stuff though,
man. That's cool, man.
Man, I think that's it. I think we had a great conversation, or at least I enjoyed it. I'm actually listening back. I learned some stuff, man.
I love it. Thank you for having me, Scotty. This was absolutely dope. Anytime you need to fill in last minute thing, just hit me up.
I sure will, man. I sure will. And Ben, we hung out last night and I was like, hop on here, man. And you're like, I don't know. And I'm like, just hop on here. All right. So
I took up a space. I'm here to help.
It was good to hang. And really, I want you on. You know your IPM, right?
Yeah. Well, my co-author knows his IPM. Honestly, you should get Zach on here. Okay. No, I learned from Zach, but Zach is definitely the guy and I'm the writer in that tandem relationship. So should definitely get Zach on, because I've been wanting to ask him, especially with the Synganic approach. He's a Synganic guy. Like, how some of this, I mean, you don't sterilize your media. You don't do some of these things when you're running with microbes and nematodes and things like that. So I think it would be a great conversation.
Well, let's set it up, man. We do this every Monday.
Yeah, I chat with him tomorrow, actually. So I'll bring it up.
Give yourself a proper shout out, man. How can people find you?
My name is Ben Owens. You can find me at CannaBenOid with an E. And right now we just launched Clean Growing, the book behind me, Zach and I, and you can get it at cleangrowing.us. Right now it's sold out on Amazon in the US, but you can get it on the Canadian market or other international markets. We're hoping Amazon restocks soon, but the digital version is also available and you can print it out or keep it on your phone.
Pretty sure that's how we started, man. This dude bought your book. We were talking about it on the show, and he's like, I'm going to buy this, man. This looks good. I'm going to buy it.
Yeah, he was showing me before we got started that it arrived already. So fast book from Bezos.
Respect, man. I have a hard enough time reading a book, let alone writing one. So respect to you, brother. I did learn a lot from your writing, man. You taught me about genetic degradation and all that stuff.
Yeah, that was a fascinating conversation you guys had on that.
We'll pick it up again, man. We sure will. Drano.
Yeah, thanks for you, man. Yeah, thanks for having me, Scotty. I appreciate it. It was nice meeting you, Jordan, and Ben. And it's always a good time to hop on here and talk to you guys and share some knowledge. So I look forward to next time.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. You did share some knowledge. Y'all did, and it was great, man. And Jordan, you're the old pro over there. Oh, wait, hang on, Drano. You do social media or anything? You want
to? Yeah, I mean, I play around on Instagram a little bit. I'm not the best at it, but it's Drano, just Drano_96.
Deal. Thank you so much, man. You'll be back, I'm sure. Or at least I hope.
Yeah, man. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Dude, perfect timing.
Great show, everybody. Thank you. I've been listening in, and definitely good info, guys. Good info. I can't wait to hang with you guys when I don't have tech issues.
Thanks for doing the heavy lifting here, man. No, I'm just busting balls. Man, sometimes you do. We just couldn't get the tech working. Sometimes you just got to say, man, I quit. I'm gonna go for a bike ride. Is that what you did?
Kind of, sort of. Out by the grow room.
Wow, it looks. Is it cold there? Are you blowing smoke, or is that just
a little bit?
It's like, man, it turned like 50 here. Thank God, I was ready to move back to Florida. It's like 20 degrees, 15 degrees for a while. Good stuff, man. All right, Jordan.
It's getting a little chilly out here too, man. I hate to say it's getting a little chilly. I'm heading inside. No, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you for inviting me. Love you guys. Down to do this anytime. Growcast. I see there's a lot of viewers here on YouTube, so head over YouTube, Growcast. We're on Spotify. We're everywhere. Just tune into the show. Love to educate you further. And guys,
look at Jordan getting chilly over in Hawaii.
Yeah, I know. Right? I might put on a long sleeve. You know what I mean? Yeah. Thank you guys. Thanks, Dude Grows. I'll see you on Growcast, and bye, everybody.
Hey, this was a lot of fun. I did learn some things, man. Thank you to everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks, Grant, guys.
Appreciate you.
Even you, man. Tight work, brother.
This was fun. Yeah. You guys, thank you guys for all the compliments and the thing. We got some new technology here. So, yeah, it's a lot cleaner. Jordan gave me a little pep talk before the show. I'm feeling good.
Crazy joy. Dude, where's did my I? Core? That's pretty good, man. All right. I should be asking Jaren that. I'm waiting on some cocoa from Jaren. Good stuff, everybody. Till next week, we'll be back next Monday. We got a show out Wednesday on DudeGrows.com or on just the Dude Grows channel. Yes. So till then, take her easy, all y'all.
Bye, everyone. Later, everyone. Right. Be safe. Right.
Hell yeah, boys. Peace. That was cool.